Good evening, officially. Now, welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. Listening in, we've got Machine King. It's good to have him listening in. Andrea in the chat. This is going to be an interesting show. There goes that word. Now, I won't get on that. A few weeks back, caused some confusion. Speaking of confusion, I get emails, and I got one from Leslie in Australia. Leslie writes, am I crazy or do I have a download problem? Wasn't the episode The Big Make, 420-2008, exactly the same story as The Big Check, 4-6-2008? Your comments were different, but they were referring to the same story, by the way. I was getting a little echo on the line there. By the way, I do enjoy your commentary, and you can say interesting as much as you like. Trying to avoid it makes you too self-conscious. Leslie Dobbs in Australia. P.S. When I wrote before, I may have given you the wrong idea about the popularity of Dragnet on Australian TV. It was a popular series, but not unusually so. In the 50s and 60s, almost all Australian TV programs were from the U.S. or Britain. Machine King says the noise came from his brother having the TV on. Oh, well, that happens. So, actually, she's neither crazy nor did she have a download problem. The problem was computer technicians frequently call an ID10T error. On my part, because last week's episode, I inserted the wrong file into the download. So if you didn't notice it, or if you did notice it either way, you can go ahead and download it. Duke Devlin in the chat room with us, he muted himself. If you've got any questions as we go through, certainly the chat's fun because you can kind of talk about the show as we go. I encourage everybody to come by and listen live. This is the 8th most listened to show on TalkShoe for last week, so I appreciate the support and information that's come through here. So, but continue to listen. We're live unless I give notice. Otherwise, we will be live every Saturday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I got an interesting email from Rick Harding. He writes, Adam, I continue to enjoy your Dragnet podcast. In fact, my interest in Dragnet has been piqued by... Oh, wait, that's actually a comment. I'm sorry. Just thought I'd write again and tell you how much I'm still enjoying the show. I've been listening for 6 months now, often pushing a pram around the neighborhood trying to get my baby daughter Libby to speak, and I'm hooked. I also enjoy the commentary you do on the show. For me, it's what marks out the old-time Dragnet show from lots of other podcasts because it's great to get some background info and also hear your passion for the show. This leads me on to my question, though. How is it that you became a fan of the show in the first place? Because I'm guessing that you weren't an original listener in the 50s. I'd love to hear how you caught the Dragnet bug. I also have a second question. Recently, my iPod told me we had the Big Check and the Big Make, but they sounded very similar. Rick, see my prior podcast. I will also go ahead and send you a... email. And Machine King is having some issues with brothers. Well, there can be some issues. If you've got anything you want to say, just hit the permission to talk, and we will go ahead and oblige that. Brothers can be difficult at times, but is this right, or was my sleep-deprived brain playing tricks? Yes, this is right, but we have fixed the problem. And Duke, I will get to you in a second. Anyhow, keep up the good work. I, for one, appreciate it. Yours, Rick Harding. This is actually the question of how I became a fan of Dragnet radio. It's kind of a reverse. It's very odd succession of things. When I was a kid, actually, my dad would not let me watch the Dragnet 1960s show because it dealt with some themes. I remember it was like 8 or 9 years old, told me, don't want to watch that because it's kind of, it's not really a kid show. Deals with some serious issues, I don't think in a, overly sensationalized way, but still, he didn't. But where I first caught any interest in Dragnet was from Square One Television. They had a takeoff on Dragnet called MathNet, which was similar, except the police officers solving the case were mathematicians. And so I watched that as a kid, and then when I got to be a little bit older, where the content of the Dragnet shows, wouldn't be an issue, I watched the 1960s Dragnet. Duke just made a very interesting typo in the chat room. I'm sorry. So basically, I got the 1960s, watched the 1960s Dragnet. It went off the air. I stopped watching most TV. I was at Walmart and I saw a Dragnet box set, and it came with, it said Dragnet on it. So I got it. And so, I watched it and I was like, wow, this is great. This is awesome. I love the 60s shows just because of Joe's Friday speeches. Those speeches, they ought to, put them on walls. They were so good. But the 1950 show, man, it was great for, its crime dramas. And then I stumbled on it from the radio show. So I kind of took a backwards route, where I started with the, MathNet. Then I went on to the 1960s Dragnet, and then to the 1950s Dragnet, and then to the radio show from the 40s. I don't think there's any further regression, because we have finally reached the end. Dr. Octagonopus, wow, that's a challenge, has joined the chat room. Hello, we're about ready to get started. So thanks for the email, Rick, and I will get back in touch with you. And we're going to go to mute all now. You talk in the chat room here, because we're going to be playing the episode. And so that way we can go ahead and enjoy the show. Here it comes, though. This is going to be the big pair. And really, it's a fascinating episode, because this is one of Webb's really educational shows. But he manages to do them with some, very interesting pizzazz that still brings home an important security tip for those of you who go on vacation. He manages to educate and entertain, and that can be a challenge to do. But I think he does it here in The Big Pair.
About to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to burglary detail. Unidentified thieves start a campaign of burglaries in your city. Homes are broken into and stripped of their furnishings. There's no lead on the criminals. Your job, get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, August 3rd. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of burglary detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the business office, and it was 9:25 a.m. when I got to room 45. Burglary detail.
Did they get all the money together, Joe?
Yeah, $1 from each man in the detail. We got to buy the gift.
When's Austin going to get married?
Next Sunday. We haven't got too much time.
You know why we always have to pick out the gift?
Somebody has to do it. You got any ideas what we ought to get him?
Talked to my wife over the weekend. She thinks it'd be nice if we get him something to start housekeeping with. Maybe some nice kitchenware, table lamp.
Yeah, I don't know if we have enough dough for a good lamp. But maybe they might like a bedspread. You can always use them. Or maybe a nice wool blanket, huh?
I don't know. Got to be careful about those personal things.
What do you mean? What's personal about a blanket?
Well, we don't know much about the girl Austin's going to marry. She might not need any.
Did you tell something?
What's that?
Could you tell me something?
Well, what do you want to know, little girl?
Is this where you come to report about stolen things?
Well, that all depends. Why don't you come on in and tell us all about it, huh?
Thank you, I will.
Like to sit down, little girl?
I'm 12 years old. I'll stand if it's all right.
All right. Well, would you like to tell us what's been stolen?
Everything.
Hmm?
Everything's been stolen. We came back this morning and found it that way. Grandpa's awful mad.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we better get the facts to start with. What's your name?
Ruth Ann Marie Jeanette.
Jeanette? Is that your last name?
No, Snyder. Ruth Ann Marie Jeanette Snyder.
Did you come down here alone, Ruth?
Yes, Grandpa sent me. He's awful mad.
Where do you live?
With Grandpa.
Where's that?
Over on College Avenue. Grandpa's leg's bothering him. Arthritis. So he told me to come down and tell you about it.
About what, ma'am?
Everything. We came back this morning on the train, and when we got home, we found everything was stolen. It's terrible.
What do you mean by everything?
I walked all the way over here to tell you. I'm thirsty, sir. Drinking fountain in the hall.
Well, we've got a cooler over here. Let me get you a cup, huh?
Thank you.
You like a drink, Ben?
Oh, no, thanks.
Lady, here you are.
Thank you very much.
Well, would you like to tell us what it's all about?
Grandpa and I got back to Los Angeles on the train this morning. We've been on a trip back to Indiana.
Uh-huh.
We took a taxi cab home from the station. When we got there, everything was gone. Everything but the rug in the dining room.
Yeah?
All the furniture, every single bit. Sofa, the chairs, my desk upstairs, the stove. Everything's been stolen. I want you to find it.
You mean someone broke in while you were gone and took all your furniture? Is that what you think?
No, they did. The lock on the back door, it was broken. They took everything but the dining room rug. That's why Grandpa's home now.
Hmm?
He thinks the crooks will be back. He's sitting on the rug because he says if they take that, they'll have to take him, too. We better hurry.
Yeah?
Grandpa's not very big.
A.M. Ben and I drove little Ruth Ann Snyder back to her home on College Avenue. It was an old-fashioned wooden frame structure, a few doors up from College Avenue and Everett Way. Ruth Ann showed us inside and introduced us to her grandfather, Mr. John H. Snyder, age 78. He told us that a year ago, he and his wife, Ruth Ann's grandmother, had come to California from Indiana and rented the house on College Avenue. The grandmother had fallen ill and passed away suddenly 3 weeks ago. He and Ruth Ann closed the house and took the body back to Indiana on the train for burial. On their return that morning, they found the house stripped of every piece of furniture. We checked room by room and listed the missing articles. We put in a call to latent fingerprints.
Do you happen to know the serial numbers of your home appliances, Mr. Snyder?
No, sir. I've lived with most of the furniture for 40 years. You get to know the things you own in 40 years.
I know it was in my room, Sergeant. My desk, my table and chair, the bed, the curtains. They took everything.
Well, how about the estimated value of the furniture, sir? What would you say it was worth?
Dollars and cents? Oh, I don't know. What's a house full of furniture worth to anyone? Guess everybody puts their own value on their things.
Yes, sir, they do.
Solid walnut dining set. A wedding present. Mahogany front room table. A solid, too. Cost money in their day. All gone.
Were there any liens against the furniture, sir?
How's that?
Did you owe anything on the furniture? I mean, there was no trouble with the finance company or anything like that.
Oh, we didn't even know what a finance company was when the wife and I was married. It was a sad enough trip as it was. And Ruthie and me get here this morning and everything's gone. All we own. Ruthie.
Yes, Grandpa.
Where the thieves broke in. Would you show the officers, please?
It's back this way.
Okay. How are you and your grandfather going to make out here, Ruth?
Well, Grandpa says we'll buy 2 cots for tonight, army surplus. There's no stove to cook on. We'll have to eat out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll have to go back to Indiana. Grandpa doesn't have much money. He's on a pension. Here's the back door. We'll see what they did to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Must have used a hammer and a crowbar. Smashed it clean through.
You'll find the crooks, won't you, Sergeant?
We're going to try, Ruth. Better have the crime lab check this, huh?
Yeah. How about your neighbors, Ruth? You know any of them well?
I know who they are. I don't know any of them good. They're not very friendly.
We'd like to ask you and your grandfather a few more questions, Ruth.
All right. I don't know what I'm going to school starts. I stole all my stuff, even my composition tablet. I didn't have to take those.
Which grade are you in, Ruthie?
I was in A7. I'll be in B8. Why would they take my school things?
I don't know.
You see how they got in back there?
Yes, sir, we did. By any chance, did any of your neighbors know that you and Ruth here were going away?
Well, I didn't mention it, no.
Then no one kept an eye on your house while you were gone?
No, I didn't think it was necessary.
Might have helped.
I just remembered, Grandpa. Mrs. Merton. I told her we were going away.
Who's that, Ruth?
She runs a store down at the corner of the bird store. Yeah. She sells canaries, other kinds of birds, too. Mrs. Merton's her name. Store's right down the corner.
You figure she's the only one who knew you'd been gone from the house for some time.
Must have been the only one.
All right, Mr. Snyder, we'll be back to see you later on. Here's our card. We'll see if we can't do something to help you out here.
Let's see here. Friday, Romero, burglary detail. All right, thank you, boy. Ruthie will show you to the door.
Yes, Grandpa.
I'm just nice.
Goodbye, sir.
Oh, say there.
Yes, sir.
Guess you understand, but I'd like to apologize anyway. I just couldn't do it.
What's that, sir?
Offer you a chair.
A.M. Ben and I called the Salvation Army and told them the Snyder situation. And then we went down the street to the store at the corner of Coolidge Avenue and Everett Way. The sign on the window said Mrs. Merton's Birdland, manager Agnes Merton. We tried the door. It was locked. The cardboard clock hanging on the glass door read, "Be back at 1 p.m. So we went back up to College Avenue and we started ringing doorbells. Some of the residents on the block didn't even know the Snyders. Of those that did, only two had noticed any activity at the house during the 3 weeks Mr. Snyder and his granddaughter had been away. They told us that they'd seen a moving van parked in front of the house about a week before. They also saw men moving furniture from the house into the van. Neither of the two could describe the vehicle or remember its license number. 12:45 p.m., we had a cup of coffee and a hamburger, and then we headed back for Mrs. Merton's bird store. Yes, ma'am. Police officers. I have a few questions for you.
Oh, certainly. Something about birds?
No, ma'am. About one of your neighbors.
Oh.
The Snyders? They live just up the street from me?
Oh, yes. Old couple. Poor Mr. Snyder passed away, you know, a few weeks ago.
Yes, ma'am. We know.
They have a wonderful granddaughter, Ruthie. She and I are getting to be great friends. The Snyders having some kind of trouble?
We're investigating a burglary at their house.
Oh, is that so? Now, you be quiet, Mary. You heard what I told Blackie. Just eat your food and be quiet.
I guess you knew the Snyders had been away for the last few weeks.
Yes, I did, but they're back. I saw Ruthie pass the window this morning.
You noticed any activity around the Snyders' house since they've been gone?
Well, yes, I did.
And just what you noticed, Miss Merton?
Well, it was 7 or 8 days ago, I think. Some white moving truck stopped in front of their place and two men started moving up Snyder's furniture.
Uh-huh.
That was a little strange because Ruthie hadn't told me anything about moving. In fact, she said definitely she and her grandpa were coming back after poor Mrs. Snyder's funeral in Indiana.
Did you investigate it all, ma'am?
Excuse me. Who was that? You, Fred? Yes, you ought to be ashamed. You can see I'm busy. Another outburst like that, and all three of you, Fred, Blackie, Mary, I'll take care of you. Oh, where was I?
You saw the moving van in front of the Snyders.
Oh, yes. And I went up to the moving men and asked them if the Snyders were going back to Indiana. Well, of course, they didn't know anything about it.
Did you inquire at the Snyders' house?
Well, no, it so happened I didn't. I was on my way to one of the big aviaries in the valley, and I just didn't have time to stop.
How about the moving van? Did you happen to notice the license?
I don't remember the numbers.
Any identifying marks about the truck you might remember? Maybe a sign on the side?
Yes, the side of the truck was painted white. And there was large blue lettering on it, van and storage, it said. I remember that much.
Was that all?
Well, yes, as I said, I was in a hurry. I had to pick up three sick canaries out in the valley.
Is there anything else about the incident you can remember? Anything at all?
No, I'm afraid not.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Merton. Here's our card if you happen to come across any further information.
Yes, all right. I'll have to go see the Snyders. Maybe I can help.
Fine. Goodbye, ma'am. Thank you very much.
Yes, goodbye. Fred, now you shut up this minute. Fred?
Well, not much help there.
Not much. Give me an idea, though.
Hmm?
Wedding present for the Austins.
Yeah?
Maybe a couple of canaries in a nice cage.
P.M. We went back to the office. Reports had come in from two more victims. That night, Ben and I drove out to interview them. The circumstances of the theft and the M.O. of the criminals matched identically with the Snyder case. Both of the families victimized had gone off on vacations and neglected to notify either the neighbors or the patrolmen in their area. Both had allowed daily newspapers to collect on their doorsteps in their absence and otherwise left signs that their homes were vacant. In both cases, the thieves had forced an entrance through a back door or window, stripped the house of every last piece of furniture, and either hauled it away themselves or hired somebody to do it for them. We started canvassing the two areas where the crimes had been reported. Again, the neighbors saw the moving vans, but none were able to definitely identify the vehicles or their license numbers. Captain Fulton called us into his office.
You're going to have to try harder. I know they're hard to get, but get them. Get them fast.
Done about everything we can so far, Skipper.
Only one small lead. Thieves seemed to be using a different moving van on each job. We started to check in the movers around town, the transfer companies.
Layton Prince come up with anything yet?
No, no luck there.
One of the lousiest rackets we've had since I came on this detail. Whole house full of furniture, everything a family owns.
Yeah. We'll stay on top of it. The stats office may come up with something.
How about an outlet for all that stuff that's been stolen? Thieves can't be sitting on it.
Pawn shop and second-hand details have been alerted.
They're checking regular outlets, auction houses, second-hand places, nothing yet.
About some kind of preventive idea. At least slow them down.
Good dose of publicity on the whole thing would help. If only people wouldn't keep it a secret when they're going away. Neighbors aren't alerted. That's why a lot of them didn't think much of it when they saw the moving vans parked at those houses.
The drawn blinds and the newspapers on the doorsteps didn't help much either. It's an open invitation.
Well, I'll see what we can do on the publicity end. We've had one campaign on this already. No, excuse me. Burglary, Captain Fulton. What's the address? Okay, I got it. Thank you. Here you go, another one.
Hmm?
63R just called it in. Family back from vacation. Furniture all gone. Here's the address here.
Thank you.
Better get on it right away.
Let's go.
I'll have a little more help for you on this tomorrow. Crowley and Barnes will be free. They can work with you.
Okay, Skipper.
Check you later.
All right.
Sergeant Friday?
Yes,
you remember me, don't you, Mrs. Merton?
Oh, sure. The bird store. Yes, ma'am. How are you?
Well, they told me to wait here. I guess everything will be all right now.
Yeah?
I saw it today on Olive Street here.
Hmm?
The truck that came to Snyder's house. That's the license number.
You are listening to Dragnet. The case history of a police investigation presented in the public interest by Fatima Cigarettes.
Tuesday, August 11th, 6 p.m. The license number which Mrs. Merton had given us was checked through DMV. We found that the truck was registered in the name of a local secondhand furniture dealer by the name of Ralph Brismore. We checked his name through the police commission and then the I Bureau. He had a good reputation, no criminal record. Early the next morning, we picked up Mr. Snyder and his granddaughter, Ruth, and we drove to Grismore's secondhand furniture store. We identified ourselves and asked to look at his buy book. Under the date of July 27th, Grismore had recorded the purchase of more than three dozen articles of furniture from a house on College Avenue. The address was that of the Snyders.
A man and a woman, Sergeant, they said they'd sold their house and they're going east. Man said the company he worked for transferred him to Boston. Told me he had to get back to take over his new job.
Would you recognize the people if you saw them again, Grismore?
Sure, I think so. The woman was a great talker. She said they figured on selling the stuff piece by piece. They'd get more, but since they had to leave town the next day, she decided to sell the whole lot to a dealer.
You got the furniture for a pretty low price, didn't you?
Pretty good price, yeah. That's why I went along in a fast deal. Wasn't going to talk myself out of a bargain. They wanted to sell fast, so I wanted to buy. I don't think anything was wrong.
Sergeant?
Yeah, Mrs. Snyder?
How well in the dining room, sir. That's it right over there.
You sure, Mr. Snyder?
The cigar been on top just above one of the legs. Know it anywhere. Seems to me that's our mahogany table. I'll look.
Sergeant? Let's see, my desk, here they are right here. My school foot, too.
All right, Ruthie.
Well, they sure stuck me, all right. That's the last fast deal I ever make.
How did they contact you, Grismore? What kind of approach did they use?
Called me on the phone, and I came out and gave them an appraisal on the stuff. Nothing suspicious about either the man or the woman.
That's so?
She was in a house dress, bandana around her head. The guy was in old clothes, just as homey as you please. Looked like he was doing a little repair work around the house, you know.
Mm-hmm. You notice that they had a car parked by the house?
No, as a matter of fact, I didn't. There wasn't any in the driveway.
Mm-hmm. No argument over the price you offered them for the furniture?
No, they seemed to hesitate a little, but they took my first offer. I thought I had a good deal.
How'd they react after you agreed on a price? In a hurry?
Said they had to board the train that night for Boston. They asked me to get the furniture out right away.
Mm-hmm.
The woman said they had other business to wind up, so if they weren't at the house when I came back with the van, why, she'd leave the back door open for me.
I guess you realize you were going to have to place a hold on this furniture that you bought.
Yeah, I know. I got nobody to blame but myself.
Well, you gave this man and woman a check for the full amount of the sale. Is that right, Grismer?
$550 down the drain.
Do you have the canceled check?
No, not yet. If you like, you can probably get it from the bank. Don't imagine those crooks would waste any time cashing.
Mm-hmm. We'd appreciate it if you'd run down to the bank with us now.
Okay, sir.
Sergeant, could I speak with Mr. Grismer?
Sure, Mr. Snyder.
Mr. Grismer.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry about all this. I didn't know.
Oh, I understand, sir. You buy furniture, don't you?
Yes, sir.
What could you give me for 2 army surplus cots?
Grismer made arrangements to round up Mr. Snyder's furniture and ship it back to his home. Then we took him down to his bank where he recovered the canceled check for $550. The endorsement read, Mr. Thomas Butterworth. According to the bank teller who waited on them, the suspect had cashed the check shortly after the sale of the Snyder's furniture. From the second-hand dealer and the clerk at the bank, we got a complete description of the man and woman known as Mr. and Mrs. Butterworth. We also had photostatic copies made of the check and specimens of the handwriting from the endorsement. From the descriptions, we checked the suspects through the stats office. We got nowhere. During the next 2 weeks, we found 6 more second-hand dealers who had been taken in on the same furniture deal. The description of the man and woman matched, and so did the handwriting and the endorsements on each check. There was only one variation. The couple went under a different name on each occasion. Wednesday, August 26th, 9 a.m.
12 cases like this today, is that right?
That's it, Captain. Got the description, M.O. handwriting. Still can't reach him.
Well, Speeds have been freewheeling for a month now. What's going to take to stop him?
Well, Ben came up with a pretty good idea this morning. We'd like to talk it over with you.
Well, what's that?
Kind of a system of decoy, Skipper. We were thinking it might be a good idea to contact all the division captains and have them ask their men if they have any neighbors going on vacation.
Yeah, I'll go ahead.
Well, if we got a few dozen houses spotted around the city, we could plant a few things. Make them look obviously vacant.
We'd keep the houses covered at all times. They ought to make pretty good bait for those thieves.
Uh-huh. How would you set it up?
We could make arrangements to get a key to each home, keep the milk and paper deliveries coming, let them pile up on the doorstep. We could reimburse the people for whatever it costs.
We're not making any headway. We could run this for a couple of weeks, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Try it.
9:30 a.m. We contacted all division commanders, requesting them to ask their men to contact burglary detail if they knew of any of their neighbors about to leave on a vacation. During the next 2 days, the response came in and the plan went into effect. 40 homes throughout the city were spotted as decoys. They were kept under surveillance at all times. In the week that followed, 2 more burglaries of the same type were reported, but the suspects failed to try any of the decoy homes. The men in the pawn shop and secondhand details continued to work right along with us. The stolen furniture kept turning up, but not the thieves. Again, the homes that had been broken into displayed all the usual signs that the occupants were away. Old circulars and newspapers scattered on the lawn. Milk bottles lined up at the door. All the blinds drawn. The decoy plan continued. No results. August 31st, we had a report of another burglary involving the theft of furniture. We made our investigation. 2 p.m., we went back to the office to get out a list of stolen articles.
Hi, Ben.
Joe?
Hi, Austin. When did you get back from your honeymoon?
Late last night. Say, Solomon, I'd sure like to thank all you fellas for that wedding present you sent us. Darn nice of you.
Well, we're glad you liked it, Austin.
Sure, beauty. I'd like to ask you a question about it, though. I hope you won't take it wrong.
No, go ahead.
Well, what is it?
You've got an early American house, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right.
It's an antique.
Yeah?
It's an apple peeler. On the first ever bill.
Oh, sure. Thanks a lot.
I get it. Burglary Friday. Yeah? Where? Right away, thanks. One of the decoy houses.
Yeah?
We got a bite. Together with Sergeants Crowley and Austin, we drove out to the decoy house where an unidentified man and a woman had been seen forcing entry through a back door. They'd been spotted by a police officer's wife who lived next door and who had called in the report. We parked down the street from the decoy home and waited. 5 minutes passed. We saw a woman dressed in a house coat come out onto the porch of the house, look up and down the street, and then go back inside. A few minutes after that, a gray Chevrolet sedan pulled up in front of the house. A man in a dark suit got out and entered through the front door. Ben called communications for a make on the car.
80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4. Request DMV on 6 Mary, 6778. Repeat, 6M, 6778. Information urgent.
Roger, 80K.
KMA, 6-7. We waited. There were no signs of activity from the decoy house. 2 minutes after Ben put in the call, we got our make on the gray sedan.
Control 4 to 80K.
80K, go ahead.
6 Mary, 6778. 6M6778 is registered to the Donahoe Furniture Company. Legal the same. 7811 Harvard Boulevard. It is a Chevrolet Deluxe two-door sedan, 1941 model. Engine number C6VA4414.
80K, Roger. KMA367.
A few minutes after the call back, a moving van drove down the street and backed into the driveway of the decoy house. The sign on the side of the van read Donahoe Furniture Company. Two men got out, went up to the front door, and were let in. They came out in a couple of minutes and loaded a sofa into the moving van.
Okay, you.
Charlie and Austin, get the sign.
Yeah, here they come.
Well, let's go. Hey, you and Charlie want to cover the back, Austin?
Right. Let's go, Charlie.
Yeah.
Come on, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. You want something?
Police officers like...
Come on, Miss Pump! Run, help! Stand still, you.
Austin and Charlie got her.
All right, hold still, mister.
Oh, hold still.
Hey, what's this all about, you cops?
That's right. You?
Max Donahoe. I'm buying this lot of furniture. Something the matter?
You're buying from the wrong people. They're not the owners. You better have your men move that stuff back in the house.
Okay, if you say so.
All right, lady, relax.
Take it easy, Helen. There's no use fighting. They got us.
I don't know what it is. I told you luck doesn't last forever.
Okay, all right. Don't make it worse.
All right, let's go.
Out there, Grossman. You better fix your shirt.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Put your hands up.
Hey, what's the matter with your shirt, Austin?
Yeah. It used to happen when she tried to get away.
Yeah, lipstick all over the collar there.
Doesn't look very good.
No, it doesn't. What are you going to tell your new bride?
I got nothing to hide. I'll tell her the truth.
Yeah?
She'll believe me. Won't she?
The story you just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On November the 25th, trial was held in Superior Court Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. The suspects were identified as Mr. and Mrs. Thomas Dunbar. They were arraigned on 15 counts of burglary and tried and found guilty on all counts. They are now serving their terms in the state penitentiary. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice came from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, the best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles.
Coming up, Duffy's Tavern. Bob Hope returns October 3rd on NBC.
All right, welcome back. Those beautiful NBC chimes indicating that Dragnet's come to an end. Before we go on, I've got some emails, but Dr. Octagon, Octagonopus and Machine King are both waiting on hold, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to unmute them. I'll go first with Dr. Octagonopus. Okay, let me go ahead and unmute. Hello! He's got his own intro music. That's good. Okay. Thank you. So it's about Dragnet, though. I think that was just the Octagonopus rap. All right. Let me go ahead and Machine King, I'll go ahead and unmute. Does he have a rap song, I wonder? Hello. Okay, well, thanks, guys. Anyway, thanks for hanging in there and for the musical interludes. Appreciate it. If you'd like to join the show and provide your own rap songs, that was just slightly unexpected, but hey, it's okay. Come on to TalkShoe, TalkShoe.com, and listen live. We are here every Saturday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, unless we aren't, and we usually are. And I'll mention it always, because I tend to be responsible, because I don't want it to be when I am away for some burglar to see that my talk show is abandoned and hijack it. now, that actually brings up the whole education thing, where, in fact, I basically worked into this episode a checklist of things you should do if you are going out. It's like, okay, you don't want newspapers piling up. You don't want mail piling up. So you're going to want to go ahead and do some things. You want to let neighbors know or patrolman that you're going to be out of town. I don't even know if there are so many patrolmen who will take that information. I wouldn't even know who happens to patrol our neighborhood, but it does suggest avoiding the papers, because that's a good dead giveaway that something's away. So they worked in that education there. And, of course, there was the wedding gift, which was the diversion into this kind of human-level subplot, and it's bringing on my, you know, just the police officers are normal people, and they do that quite a few different ways. I encourage everybody to please go and cast a vote for us on Podcast Alley. We are actually doing very well this month. We're number 74 on Podcast Alley as of right now, and your support is appreciated. Some of the comments we've gotten for the past week, keep it up, good stuff, Adam. Love Dragnet, always have, always will. It's great to catch the old radio plays. Cheers from Australia. And from Brian Hampton, he writes, Adam, I continue to enjoy your Dragnet podcast. In fact, my interest in Dragnet has been piqued by your podcast, and as a result, I got a copy of Michael Hayes' book, My Name's Friday, for my birthday. I haven't started to read it yet, but it looks interesting. nice little please keep this podcast coming, Brian Hampton, New Jersey. And I actually got a copy of it, too. I was going to talk a little bit about it, but with the email I got from Rick, I'll save that for next week, because I don't want to go over long, particularly since this is a this is going to be a special episode, where we're going to throw in a bonus feature. Now, usually we just do the Dragnet show, we listen, and that's the end of the show. But I like to mix in a little bit. Usually it's Jack Webb related, but I'm also doing a Superman podcast. And some people listen to the podcast and they like just Dragnet. But there are other people, they just enjoy the old-time radio, you know, whatever it might be. So I'm going to give everybody today a sneak preview of Superman. Pod crashers are the best. well, we can debate that, Machine King. Now, I'm gonna get to this. We're going to actually start with Superman. This is an episode. Superman shows are serial, so they go in order. And they're usually several parters. There's a lot of cliffhangers, particularly in the early Supermans. And this is actually probably a little less advanced in terms of the technology, in terms of the sound effects compared to Dragnet. This is actually from April 1940. In this episode of the old-time radio Superman show, we aired this on Wednesday. And if you enjoy this Superman show, you can subscribe at talkshoe.com and you can sign up for it, and you can actually listen to the show live. We'll be there Sunday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern and 1:30 p.m. Mountain, and you can go ahead and listen live, and you can pod crash. So the people who've been in there tonight, I know you are, so I probably won't unmute you. but we're going to go ahead and take a listen here. This episode is called The Airplane Disaster, and this is part one, and part two will air tomorrow live, and also other episodes air not only Sunday but Wednesday nights at 7:30 p.m. Mountain, 5:30 p.m. Eastern. This is about a 10-minute episode, The Airplane Disaster, here on the old-time Dragnet show, featuring a little bit of Superman.
Presenting the transcription feature, Superman.
Up in the sky, look, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Superman. Mighty visitor from another world who came to Earth when the planet Krypton was destroyed by quakes and explosions. Superman, who can bend steel in his bare hands, leap tall buildings at a single bound, race a speeding bullet to its target, and who walks about among human beings as champion of the weak and the oppressed in his character of Clark Kent, news reporter. As our story opens today, Kent has returned from dealing with the Dinelli gang of racketeers, has taken up his routine duties in the office of the Daily Planet. Already a new and thrilling assignment lies just ahead. So far, Kent knows nothing about it. You find him at his desk, knocking out a story on his typewriter, while Jimmy Olsen, the planet's copy boy, hangs around in open admiration.
Hi, Mr. Kent. Anything I can do for you?
Huh? Oh, no. No thanks, Jimmy.
Doing a follow-up on the Dinelli story?
No, this is something else.
Oh. Wouldn't be anything about that airplane story, would it?
What was that about an airplane story?
Gee, didn't you see it? All about them planes crashing down at Bridger Field out west? Boy, it's keen.
Oh, I guess I missed it. What's so keen about planes crashing? That's pretty serious.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way. It's just that I go for anything about planes.
Wow, budding pilot, eh?
You said it, Mr. Kent. The minute I get old enough.
Well, you've got quite a while to wait, Jim. Beat it now. Go somewhere else while I finish this story.
Okay, Mr. Kent. But if I ever get a chance to fly, I'm telling you, the Daily Planet will need another copy boy.
Oh, Kent. Clark Kent.
Calling me, Mr. White?
Yeah. Come in my office a minute, will you? I got somebody here I want you to meet.
Sure thing. Coming right along.
Close the door and pull up a chair. Kent? This is Mr. Hamlin of the National Air Service. Flew for Uncle Sam during the war. Manages private transport service now.
How do you do, Mr. Hamlin?
Glad to know you, Mr. Kent.
You're not handling anything important now, are you, Kent?
No, sir. Now that the Dinelli gang is cleaned up.
Fine. Hamlin's going back west to Bridger Field tomorrow, and you're going with him.
Bridger Field?
You look a little startled, Mr. Kent.
You've seen the stories, Kent?
Well, I've been hearing about them.
5 crashes of planes in 2 weeks. That's right, isn't it, Ed?
6.
Oh, yeah, 6. In the space of the past 2 weeks, Kent, one of the most remote, least known airports in the country, 6 brand new transport planes have come down in flames.
What? All of them?
Every single one, Mr. Kent.
Oh, what's the answer?
Well, that's what we'd like to find out. Mr. Hamlin's a friend of mine, and I've told him you're a little bit more than the average reporter. Not much more, but a little.
I've given you quite a build-up, Mr. Kent.
If there's a story out there, Kent, you get it.
And if you can find out at the same time what's happening to our plane...
Great Scott, Mr. Hamlin. Do you mean to say you don't know?
Mr. Kent, we haven't the faintest idea. The thing's weird, unbelievable.
But what about the pilots, the men on board? What do they say?
So far, there haven't been any survivors.
What?
It's more than an accident, Kent. It's design. Cold and deliberate and deadly.
Mr. White, what makes you say that?
Go on, Ed. Tell him what you told me yesterday.
Know anything about Bridger Field, Mr. Kent?
No, not a thing, except that it's way out in the Southwest Rockies.
Right. Most desolate country in the world. Down near the border, completely surrounded by rocks and ravines and miles of desert. If a plane comes down anywhere except on the field, well, it cracks up, that's all.
But these planes, the ones you're talking about...
I'm getting to that. I just wanted to explain the lay of the land first.
Is the field near any town, Ed?
20 miles, more or less. Del Rio is just over the border.
What's that, Del Rio?
The usual thing. Gambling joints, racetrack. Oh, yes, the circus.
The what?
Well, it's one of our amusements. It's the Lawback Tent Show. Have you heard of it?
No, not me.
Well, it's not a very big one, but it comes every year, and it saves us from dying of boredom. That is, it did until 2 weeks ago.
What happened then?
First of the accidents.
Oh.
Since then, we've not been bored.
Excuse me, Mr. White. Telegram for Mr. Hamlin.
Oh, yes, thank you. I told him I'd be here. You'll excuse me, will you, gentlemen?
Great heavens! Ed, what's the matter?
It's another accident.
Yes, another accident. Another plane crashed in flames. Everyone killed just as it approached the field.
Ed, what's going on out there?
Wait a minute, look here. I've changed my mind. I said we'd go back tomorrow.
Ready whenever you are, Mr. Hamlin.
This business can't go on. It's devilish, inhuman. There's something behind it. Kent, I'm going to Bridger Field today. If you want to come along, Kent, well, meet me at the city airport in 1 hour.
What's the time, Kent? 4 o'clock. Be daylight pretty soon now. Now you can see it getting lighter in the east already.
Following wind. Another 2 hours and we're there. This ship of mine is fast. I only hope nothing else has happened in the meantime.
Well, go on with what you were saying, Mr. Hamlin.
Oh, yes, about the plane.
Yes.
I didn't tell you everything, Kent.
No?
No, I've been saving this for the last. I didn't want you to think I'd gone crazy, lost my mind.
What is it?
Well, in those 6 crashes, when we went out and examined the wreckage, there wasn't a trace of a motor.
What?
No, I don't expect you to believe it, but it's true. The engines of every one of those 6 planes simply vanished into thin air. And that's one of the reasons I say this whole business is in the accident. It's been planned, and someone's behind it. But who is he, Captain? What's he trying to accomplish? What was that?
What happened? Hey, there's a hole in the window. Something went through the glass.
Take a look back in the baggage compartment, will you, Kent? If there's anything wrong,
something may be loose. That might have been a bolt.
Call back if you find anything.
Mr. Kent!
What the... Mr. Hamlin, there's someone aboard.
What's that?
Mr. Kent, I'm in the baggage compartment. Open
Hamlin,
the door.
Hamlin, we got a stowaway. Jimmy! Jimmy Oates!
Don't be sorry, Mr. Kent. I sneaked on board at the airport, Mr. Kent. I just had to come.
You mean to say you've been hiding in there all the way?
I wouldn't have come out now, only something's happened. I had to tell you.
What are you talking about?
Mr. Kent, there's a plane coming up behind. Coming up fast, and they're shooting at us.
What?
I tell you, they are. Didn't you hear the bullet a minute ago? Look, I'll go back. You can see your wing lights.
You're right. There is a plane back there.
And they're shooting. With a machine gun.
Come on, Jimmy. I'm out of that compartment. Something's happened to Mr. Hamlin.
Jiminy, the plane.
Spinning, it's out of control. Quick. Mr. Hamlin.
What's he doing?
Mr. Hamlin. Listen. Jimmy, Mr. Hamlin's been shot. One of those bullets. Here, quick. Help me get him out of there. I've got to get to those controls.
Mr. Kent, can you fly?
Yes, enough to land this plane. Quick.
I've got him.
That's it. Lay him on the floor here.
Quick, Mr. Kent. Grab the controls. Bring her out of that spin.
All right, Jimmy. You look after Mr. Hamlin. I can handle her.
Oh, boy, that's it, Mr. Kent. You got her.
What about that other plane? Where is it?
Hey, Mr. Kent, they're shooting again. They're right on our tail. They're trying to get over us, Mr. Kent. What do we do?
Not much we can do while I'm sitting here. Jimmy, didn't I see a rifle in the baggage compartment?
There is one. Do you want it?
Bring it here, fast. There's just a chance.
Here you are, Mr. Kent.
Look here, Jimmy. You said you wanted to fly. Well, now's your chance.
What do you mean?
More bullets. They'll get us in a second now. Quick, Jimmy. Slip in here and take the controls. Hold her just as she is. Can you do it?
I'll sure try. Give me the stick.
Just as she is now.
Hey, Mr. Kent, where are you going?
I'm going to take that rifle and climb out on the wing. If there's any shooting being done, I guess we can do it as well as they can. Stay with it now, Jimmy. Hang on to those controls and don't lose your nerve.
I'll be all right.
Now then, out on the wing. Good thing it's dark. I wouldn't want Jimmy to see his friend Clark Kent take a header into space as Superman, which is just what he's going to do. Out we go. Out and back. Faster. Faster. I think I'll just take one fast dive at their propeller. Here we go. That does it. Down they go. I'll just dive down after them and find out what this is all about. Jimmy. What's the matter with Jimmy? Our plane's going down to us in a tailspin. Gotta get back there. Up we go. Up, up, and faster.
Mr. Kent! Mr. Kent, come back! Mr. Kent!
All right, Jimmy. Here I am. What's the matter?
The plane! It's spinning. It's out of control.
What's wrong? Great Scott, where'd that oil come from?
Take the stick. We're going down.
Move over. That's it. I have it.
Mr. Kent, that oil. All over the glass. I can't see it.
The broken line. Sprays over everything. Can't go far this way.
The motor. It's missing, Mr. Kent. We've got to land.
Hang on, Jimmy. Don't lose your nerve. We'll go as far as we can this way, and then we'll see.
Mr. Kent, the motor, it's getting worse. It'll stop running any second now. Listen.
High over the wastelands of the Southwest, with a missing motor and a wounded man in the cockpit, young Jimmy Olsen and Clark Kent looked desperately for a landing place in the great darkness of early dawn. Who was trying to shoot Hamlin's plane down, and why? What can Superman do to foil the plans of an enemy who so far is not even known? Tune in next time and follow the exciting story.
Up in the sky! Look! It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's Superman!
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
All right, welcome back here on the old-time Dragnet show, slash Superman tonight. Quite an interesting adventure. I don't know how it's going to end. I've not listened ahead all the way to the end, but it's always something quite spectacular with Superman, to be sure. Duke Devlin is on the line, and I think he may have a legitimate actual question, so I'm going to unmute and hope for the best. All right. And with that, we will bring our show to a close. Wait, do you have... No. We let the pod crashers on once. Okay, we're not going to do that again. Let you apologize. Okay, I accept your apology. And with that, we will go ahead and wrap up this episode of the Old Time Dragnet Show. Please check out and vote for us at podcastalley.com. For now, though, I thank everybody so much for listening in, even the pod crashers. And we will be back next Saturday night. And if you want to check out the next episode of Superman, you can go ahead and go to TalkShoe.com tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 p.m. Mountain. We'll have a new episode up. For now, though, I thank everybody so much for listening. This is Adam Graham, signing off.